independence is there, freedom is there. They're just not taking advantage. Four, where is the evidence of matter being eternal? Professor Tyndall has decisively established that there is no evidence about the eternity of the matter. Even if any person lives for eternity and ascertains that matter is eternal, then also it cannot be believed due to the lack of evidence. The eternity of matter cannot be trusted. Right? We see everything about matter is temporary, so therefore one couldn't be based on that it's eternal. We know as a principle it is, but its manifestation is temporary. Right? So therefore, it will not have eternal influence. Right? Yes?
I had this, that work with jivas. You have nityasiddha, nityabuddhas. You have eternally bound and eternally free. And then also, Krishna says in the Gita that if those who want to forget me, then I'll perpetually cast them down to lower species of life. So there seems to be an eternality about that.
You said, in principle, the material nature always exists, but its manifestation is temporary. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise it's in the shape of pradhan, which is just dead matter. So everything about it that's living and moving and all those kind of things, that's because of Krishna's entrance into it. Like that, the jiva's entrance into it, the jiva's desire. Therefore it's happening like that. Otherwise, then it's not happening. Does that make sense? Yeah, so they're taking it that the soul is controlled by matter. No, the soul comes under the influence, but it's not actually, it is superior to matter, right? Because they're taking it that matter is superior and the soul is junior to that. Therefore, it is controlled. No, the soul is superior, but it comes under the influence due to desire, material desire, you know, wanting to be lorded over material energy. Like that. Does that make sense? 5. Buchner and Molescott have said that matter is eternal. It is only a fanciful conclusion of theirs. In due course of time, if matter gets destructed, then this conclusion will become unreal. It's always being destructed around us, so why won't it be destructed? Why will not the principle continue? Comte says that the beginning and the end of the universe need not be investigated, and that is only a childish counsel. But since the spirit is a sentient principle, it cannot give way its counsel of natural inquisitiveness. Investigation after the faculty of cause and effect itself is the mother of science. By following this view of Comte, within no time all the human intelligence will be lost. Human beings will become equivalent to inert matter. Right? So they're saying you don't have to look for the beginning and end, just deal with the present, you know, which is a nice point in that it's what you do right now has to be done based on what's happening right now. But it doesn't mean that where you want to go from here is not considered, and where you have been is not considered. Therefore, if you did that, then everything would just have to go away. Right? Because otherwise, this principle of how are they going to be in that 1/11th of the second only, there's going to be some future and past elements of it. Like that. So wanting to look into that, he says, is childish, but that's just the nature of the soul to be inquisitive. Right? Because it's being sat chit. Chit means knowledge. So the soul is always interested in knowledge. Therefore, then it will not be. It would be foolish. Because he is then putting up all these things where you have to be contemplative and all these things. And if he's worried about being childish, then why is his deity a mother? You know? Like that. So that put yourself in the child position. So very contradictory. 7. Until and unless the creation of human sentience out of materials is seen practically, it is only utter foolishness to believe in such things. We are having the past history of about 3,000 years. In course of this period, no one has seen any self-born human being. If at all human beings are produced out of the union of materials or by means of material evolution, in that case at least a single human being would have been definitely born in that process in the period of the last 3,000 years. Right? So he's going with their point of the modern science is accepting, you know, this much time, you know, that they say will be civilized because people have written languages and that. Now it's been pushed back farther. But in any case, his point is that if the soul is created from matter, then how come matter has not generated on itself living beings? It never has. Right? So therefore, so all beings that are there are produced from other beings. So how would you say dead matter is the source? Right? Because if the soul is not in the body, then it's not functioning. Everyone will say they're dead. Right? So we haven't seen any dead bodies giving birth to living beings. Right? It's never happened. Or dead matter itself. So matter is the source of the soul. Then why it's not just coming from anywhere? You're saying, why are these rules that it has to come from something else that is, you know, sentient? 8. The consistency and supreme elegance inherent in the lives of human beings, beasts, trees, etc. The regulation and control of the objects of their various faculties. The intricate perfection underlying the entire universal creation, etc. are definitely indicating the creatorship of some supreme sentient principle. If that supreme sentience is established as the cause of this universe, then the doctrine of materialism gets entirely unfounded. Right? Everything is working so perfectly. So how can something work perfectly unless there's a higher intelligence? There's higher intelligence, then if that is actually established, then this whole materialism becomes destroyed, because materialism means material energy is the supreme, and everything's coming from that, everything's based on that. So it's basically a form of this Vaisheshika. Right? It's just material elements are generating everything, and the variety is coming from these elements, then transforming into so many other aspects, and then transforming back, so that's all there is, right? Does that make sense? So if there's a higher, sentient being, then that would naturally be the source of everything and of the souls. Because the soul is sentient, the higher being is sentient. But dead matter is dead matter. How it's not producing sentient beings. So then materialism actually becomes, as you said here, unfounded. The materialism can be discarded by various logical reasonings. Only the most unfortunate ones amongst human beings adhere to the materialism. They do not understand about the spiritual bliss. Their hopes and convictions are quite feeble. The doctrine of materialistic extinction will be duly discussed later on. Okay, now the next section. Okay, does that make sense? So we had coming down, because you still see there must be a faith there. They're using intelligence, but it's not based on just analyzing, because pure empiricism means it could be something else, but you don't know because you are contemplating, you're investigating. But when they have done a little bit of investigation and come up with their conclusion, and then that's it, it's not open for anything more, then that means then it's based on some kind of faith, right? So in this, then how do I say, those with faith, then they'll be either following karma and jnana, and those in karma, then you have the, you know, pure materialists here, who's saying that it's all coming from matter, rather than by high, means the higher principles, then we can work with matter and get rewarded or punished for that, which would be, you know, your karma mimamsas and that. But this is just material energy is the source of everything, therefore, you know, we just interact nicely with it and we get what we need from it. Right? But the point is why would that happen if it's dead matter? Why would we be sentient, and why would our endeavors then create something that is pleasing to us? Right? How would this all work? How does dead matter arrange all this if matter is the supreme? Does that make sense? So they're dealing with dead matter, but at the same time, is they're using, conscious living entities as their goals and what they work with as their deities, but at the same time is saying that all that is subservient to dead matter. Right? So therefore, he says only the most unfortunate souls would stick to this. Right? I mean, somebody might come in contact with it, be that, but then coming in contact with something higher would give it up. So only those would remain. They must be, it says here, most unfortunate. Right. You have to be really foolish. Okay, so now, worldly dealings of the materialist will be discussed here. They say that, even though there is no God, nothing called soul and world beyond death, yet human beings should observe religious discipline. Right? So they're saying there's no God, no soul, and no world beyond death, but human beings should follow some religious discipline. Right? So it's a bit of a mix-up here. The activity which promotes the happiness of people is known as piety, and that which may bring inauspiciousness to the people is known as sin. Selfish bliss must be subordinate to the activities of unselfish bliss. Therefore, the worldly religion should be necessarily followed. By the observation of it, the suffering and misery, which is the repercussion of that sin, will be avoided. Since the nature is always lawful, the human life also must obey the laws, since it is a product of the nature. Right, so at least that means they're saying here is that there's religion and then there's the laws of nature. So they're saying that, you know, humans should follow both. Learned persons should inquire after the proper rules regarding the working of the human life. The happiness derived out of this lawful living itself is the summum bonum of life. In other words, living a proper religious and, you know, dutiful life according to the rules of religion and nature, then how you say, the happiness derived from that, that's the ultimate goal. That's as good as it gets. For the attainment of that happiness, one should regularly inquire after and observe, observe the natural laws of life. The doubt which may arise here that after death, since I do not remain, what is the use of observing these rules of life without entirely engaging in the individual satisfaction and bliss? Right? In other words, if the whole point of the thing is to follow the religion and the laws of nature so I can enjoy, not that the laws of nature are necessarily in their own important, or that religious is necessarily in its own important, that by following them, I would be, it will add to my happiness, because piety is, you know, is seen to give good results and piety bad results. But in many cases, we're following piety that doesn't give us any result that is observable now of our enjoyment. So since there's nothing after death, there's no afterlife, why should I be following those? Right? It's not giving me immediate results, or short enough term that it's obvious that it's worth it. Right? You know, I invest in a business and after 3 years I make profit, but it's after 3 years. It's not next life, or I don't see it this lifetime. Right? With that. The answer is that even though you attain death at the end of life, this is their answer, the activities done by you will not lose their capacity of producing their results. Those useful activities will bear agreeable fruits for the enjoyment of the other human beings. Oh, okay, so this is where they put it off. Is you'll do something, it'll get some benefit for others. So then that's, you should be happy with that. So you're happy and then the others are happy. So then the pranamoy kind of things. Those useful activities will bear agreeable fruits for the enjoyment of the other human beings. If you carry on the activities of marriage, production of your children, teaching of education, and discipline to them, etc., the good results of your action will be definitely enjoyed by others. If you earn money and construct schools and colleges, in for the travelers, roads, and other structures, they will be usefully utilized by other human beings. Even if the result of the actions also are lost in a short time, the various activities done by different human beings will not be lost. At their maturity, the activities will produce an unprecedented potency. When that potency becomes stronger due to the future activities, it will elevate this endless universe. Therefore, the activities done by you will provide an unselfish gain for you. Like that. So you can see is very much there's the element of faith here. They go into it. Somehow or another, they just have faith in the material energy. That if I just do nice and do good, then everything will be not good. But they have no idea of a higher entities, right? Does that make sense? Other than material nature.
That's karma mimamsa.
No, no, no. This is way below karma mimamsa. Okay. This is materialism. Okay. This is how you say? That's like fruit of activity. This is materialism, meaning dead matter is the source of everything, like that. So this is uses Comte and these other guys, like that positivism they have, like that, or sentimentalism. Like that sentiment for others, or the positive, be good, like that. So, so it's true is that what you do will give that, but then how is that happening? Why should that make you happy? Right? So that means the element of sacrifice is there, but dead matter doesn't do anything. So how where would this concept of sacrifice come from? Where would the whole thing of life, where would religion come from? Right? Why all these things are there, that's not being addressed. So it must be coming from some higher intelligence. But unfortunately, that's not accepted here. They have their answers to all these things, right? Because these are natural doubts that may come up. But their answers, we see, are a bit falling short, that they do not... they're dealing with results of karma, but they don't understand the process of karma itself, action and reaction. So, therefore, why someone would be in a better born in a better position and someone not, that will have a problem with this. You know what I'm saying? So, what is there before, what's after? Like you have a picture, and then you just take, that's reality. But what happens before that, what happens after that picture, you don't know. Right? So it's the way it is. So this is the problem. The religion of materialists is perishable. Like a structure. Okay. Like a structure without foundation. Right? In other words, they have some nice points. And it's not that their points aren't connected with the real facts. But they don't know how they connect, and so therefore it doesn't give that result for them. Does that make sense? Is that they have part of, they know if you do a good work, others get a benefit. But why does that work? You know? And so then, yeah. The religion without the hopes and fears of world beyond death will not be followed by human beings. Regarding the advocates of selfish materialistic bliss, regarding the epithet of their doctrine itself indicates that they are quite selfish. Even those who profess unselfish material bliss also are selfish. No doctrine of unselfishness can remain in this world. We go through the book named System of Nature, written by von Holbach in the year 1770 AD and written in the name of Mirabond. He has elaborately discussed that, quote, there cannot be unselfishness in the world. Religion is a device of making oneself happy by subscribing to the happiness of others. We are also feeling that unselfishness is as useless as an air castle. The usefulness of unselfishness is only to bring about one's own happiness without misery. By hearing the word unselfish, if the other selfish people show their faith in it, I can easily arrive at my desired end. Right, so he's saying is that if you say unselfish, then everybody will get involved and what I want to get done happens. You know what I'm saying? So the whole idea is in the material world is everybody is worried about themselves. But it's just a matter if they're willing to include others in it or not. If they're willing to include others in their selfishness, that's called unselfish. Right? If they're not willing to include others, that's just called selfish, and that's bad. Does that make sense? So in other words, if it's a cooperative selfishness, then that's considered good. Just like in the material world, is if there's some element of cooperation in that and mutual attachment, it's called love, even though it's not actually love, it's just self-centered, right? But it's as good as it gets here, so everyone calls that love here. So in the same way as even though it's selfish, but because there's a cooperation, therefore you call it selfless. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like within a group of thieves. Then you have nicer thieves and not so nice thieves. The not so nice are more selfish and not so cooperative with the others. And the ones that are more, you know, involving others, more cooperative and more sharing, they'll be considered better thieves. right, within the community of thieves, no? He's an upstanding thief. Right? Make sense? You know, like in a jail, prisoners, then some prisoners are considered better and some are worse. Why? Because the ones that are better are willing to follow the rules, willing to cooperate, willing to share things, help others. You know, that selfless aspect is there, and the ones that aren't are considered worse. But they're all criminals. Does that make sense? So it's relative. Within the world of those who are selfish, means the material world means selfish, those who are a little less of that, or at least willing to cooperate in their selfishness, then are called the selfless. Does that make sense? In the absence of one's own happiness, no one would have engaged in such activities. Right? If you're not at least coming happy from it, right? Because remember that the standard is pure unalloyed devotional service. Right? Here is that this is so. Within this, it may sound proper, but you're comparing it actually to the eternal, right? The constitutional. So the conditional is always going to have a problem. So one is doing it because of your own happiness. Does that make sense? So even though, you know, you're giving money, giving time and all that, if you're not getting some happiness from it, no one's doing it. There's not a satisfaction, no one's doing it. So it's considered selfless work, but they're getting something from it. Right? And what they get is, you know, that emotion, that sentiment, the sentimentalism, that positiveness that is there. Does that make sense? So that's their motive. Some people even sacrifice their own lives for gaining the bliss of the self. All the religious bliss is selfish. Even the divine love also is for the sake of the self. The thing which is natural is always selfish, because the word nature denotes the property of the self. Right? It means you say something's nature, it's what's the nature of that thing. Right? So it's about itself. Selfishness itself is the nature. What is unselfish, that is quite unnatural, and therefore is never visualized. Okay. The fact is that without the expectation and inclination towards future life and future happiness, no human being can engage himself in any activity. Intelligent people cannot have any regard to the Apurva theory of Jaimini as well as the potential theory of the Western materialists. Those who follow these theories are deceived to some extent. Even though the smartest scholars of India do mention the Apurva theory of Jaimini, but in practice all of them consider the grace of God as well as the bliss of the world beyond death. They would have certainly discarded the Apurva theory should they come to know about the controversy of the Apurva theory with God. To say Jaimini knew pretty well that the belief of God is quite natural in the heart of the jivas. Therefore, he has imagined the God under the influence of the Apurva, which is this trickish cleverness to sanction the fruit of individual actions. Right? You have this Apurva, so then it just means it's just some great, wonderful thing, just that potency. But then there is God who approves everything, right? Because karma means you're going to have to get the results. So someone has to be approving it, right? So then this way he works in God, because people are inclined towards, like that. This is Jaimini. Due to the cunningness of associating an imaginary God, the atheistic doctrine of karma is strongly followed in India, as preached by the smarta pundits. It is quite natural that the selfishness of one person hampers the selfishness of another. For this reason, an ordinary witted person respects the doctrine of the so-called unselfish person, in view to deriving the fruits of his own selfishness. That means you want to get what you want, but if there's not some cooperation like that, then what you want you may not get, because the problem is that if each person is simply endeavoring for what they want, it's there's going to be conflict with another living entity who's trying to get what they want. Does that make sense? So because of that, then the living entities have to take up a selfless model, but they're taking it up to get their own purpose.
right? So it's just a cooperation amongst others, right? Because here, remember here is that we're dealing right now, he's mentioning Jaimini's, which would be working within the Vedic sphere, but this Western material is working outside it, right? So you have to be able, on pure logic, to establish the, or refute the points, right? Because they don't accept the Veda. They're not accepting the principle of God and his position, or the demigods, or karma, or the nature of the soul. They're not part of their philosophy. So therefore, that's why then in it you just have to look at it that, you know, from these points. Right? Does that make sense? Because the ultimate point is you please God, that's perfection. Real selfless means pleasing God. Right? So then you follow these rules for his pleasure. But if you're following them for your own pleasure, you know, or for so-called others' pleasure, but it's still for your pleasure. You're happy seeing the others happy. So that's nice. But that's still not actually selfless. Selfless means when God is happy, like that, you do your activities to make him happy. That's selfless. Right? So it's in connection with the Lord that actually has something. Because otherwise, you're going to do an activity anyway connected with your nature. You can't act outside your nature. Yes?
Yeah, you said it stops being selfish once you're doing it for the pleasure of the Lord. But couldn't it be said that also one could be doing something for the pleasure of the Lord knowing that he will be rewarded accordingly?
Yes, that beginning of devotional service is. That's why it's called, it's mixed devotional service. It's mixed with fruitive activities or jnana. Means, in other words, I'll perform this activity, I will become happy. Or I'll perform this activity, I'll be freed from material contamination. You understand? So your karma and jnana are mixes. That's why Rupa Goswami is saying pure unalloyed then means without those two. Does that make sense? So because otherwise what we're going to do is we're going to base our elevation or base what we're trying to get to on our own experience. Right? So we do things, we see we do something good, we get a good result, bad, we get a bad result. So therefore, you know, we take religion as more a formalized form of that. Right? But the point is why would religion be like that? Right? People just accept it, but why would it be? Unless it's based on God's laws. So that means God has to give it. That's the basis of religion, that is God given. Right? Not that just somebody makes it up, otherwise someone makes up a religion, but what's the difference between a religion or, you know, rules for a club? You know what I'm saying? There's no difference. So unless it is descending from the Lord, so then that has meaning, because that's where the real relationship is happening, is in context of understanding who you are and who everybody else is. Then you have real relationships. So when you understand God, you understand the jivas, you understand the material energy and what their relationship, then you actually have real relationships. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, in other words, the difference between the untruth and the truth, many times, is just adding the Lord to it. Right? I mean, always that will be a principle, but it's sometimes that simple. Right? Other times it's been convoluted in that, or they'll only accept part of the truth. So they're accepting elements of the truth. They can't function outside of that. Concept of formless, there is Brahman. Concept of selfless, there is that. The concept of material energy controlling the living entities is there, but it's not the supreme control. It's not the permanent control. It's not the origin. That living entities are born in the material nature with their forms and everything, but technically speaking, it's how you say, it is the arrangement of the Lord's potencies that are making it happen. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, they're taking part of a truth and then putting that all together into their philosophy. But it's weak in that it's not actually connected to the supreme absolute truth. Therefore, it doesn't give a good result. Right? It'll give some kind of result that may be better than, you know, not having any philosophy at all. But, you know, it's an improvement, at least their thinking, at least that. But still, the problem is that it's incomplete. Does that make some sense? So the idea is that if one is able to understand the philosophy nicely and understand its elements, you can see what are the elements that someone else is using, and actually how those are connected to Krishna. Right? So you can help them connect it to Krishna. Then wherever they stand works, because then they're just starting at a particular place in devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? So then how do you say? But the difficulty is that if it's all Maya, which is true, as long as on that, then they'll just take up devotional service, great. But if not, then you have to be able to show us what they're dealing with means is only carrying part. The reason that it has any validity at all is because it's carrying part of the truth about Godhead. That's the real thing, but they're not seeing that aspect to it. They just have used their intelligence, observed some things, put some things together like that, heard from someone else, and then come up with these ideas. Does that make sense? So they'll be inconsistent. So the only real consistency is when it's in connection with the Supreme Lord. Then everything becomes consistent, because then He has entered everything, therefore all aspects are connected to Him. Does that make sense? Why is karma called karma? Right? Is there any truth in karma, in the process of karma? Right? Is it, if you do an action, you'll get a result? Is that true? If it's based on, you know, authority, and that, then will it give a better result if it's not? You know, based on authority means it'll be pious as opposed to impious, right? Means will there be, you know, have, depending upon how it is, the more good it is, will it have effect on future lives? Right? You know, from that doing good work, will you enjoy? Yes. So all these things are true, right? But the problem is because they're leaving the Lord out of it, then they're temporary. So for all that work and all that endeavor in an act to do the right activity, the point is what is the real pious activity? Right, devotional service. So in other words, the idea of doing pious as opposed to impious. So devotional service is the real pious activity. Not non-devotional service is the real impious activity. Right? And by devotional service, you please the Lord. Therefore, you become happy. The other is you please the demigods. They give you the result of your actions. Therefore, you're happy. So it's selfish. But the other one is you're pleasing the Lord. That's selfless. Him being pleased, you're pleased. Right? Because He's the complete whole. When He's happy, then everything becomes happy. Right? But you have to recognize you're part of that. Just like I identify as the doer of karma, I get the result. I identify as the servant of Krishna, then when Krishna's happy, I get the result. Right? The devotee doesn't engage in karmic activities, therefore they perform an activity, they don't get the result. Right? Does that make sense? So in the same way is that you engage in an activity without seeing the Lord involved in it, you don't get the result of your connection with the Lord. You know what I'm saying? It's just the reverse. Right? So the idea is that the karma kandi is dealing with truth, but it's not absolute truth because they're not connecting it with the absolute. As soon as you connect with the absolute, then it's devotional service, it's karma yoga. Right? Gyan on its own is dealing with part of the absolute truth, but it doesn't have the absolute involved. Right? Other than the formless aspect. But it gives limited results. So, but if you connect it to the Lord, then it becomes jnana yoga. Right? Does that make sense? Why? Because devotional service includes all these things. Body, mind, words engaged in Krishna's service. So that means body is your karma, right? Your mind is jnana, you know, and your words are jnana. So karma, jnana, and jnana yogas, right? That's what's discussed in the first six chapters of Gita. Right? They're not discussing any other systems. Those three, they cover everything, because one's the body, one's the mind, one's the intelligence. Right? And so then everything's engaged. So if you take one of those and not connect it to the Lord, it's called karma. Or you take one of those, not, you know, you take the next one, that's called jnana. You understand what's happening? So it's devotional service, just lacking the devotion. And as soon as it lacks devotion, it takes on another nature. Does that make sense? So then, but it's basically just like you study the book at the university, right? You study the book at home, right? Not connected with the university. What's the difference? Is the process different? No, you're still going to look at the book, you know, the same way. You're going to start from one end of the book, go to the other, turn the pages, you know, look at all the little words and do all that. It's still going to be the same. What's the difference? Yeah, you get a degree or not. So that's the whole point, is that you're doing the same process, but one you get, you know, you get devotional service, the other you don't. That makes sense. So it's not that there's all these systems and then there's devotional service. No, there's only devotional service, there's only Krishna, that's all that's going on here. It's an illusion to think there's anything else. But people in illusion, because they don't see this, then each one is given its own category. Is it the intention to please Krishna? Yes. That's why it's favorable. Because just because it's connected to Krishna, that's always a step up, but it doesn't mean that it necessarily is favorable. Right? So that's why the example is given of Kamsa or these other demons who are always thinking of Krishna. Like that. Hiranyakashipu was searching after God. Right? He wanted to know if he was in the pillar. But it wasn't favorable, because when he finds him, then he'll kill him. That's his idea. Right? So it's not what you'd call devotional. Right? Or you see that the devotees of the demigods, so-called, they endeavor and do so much worship and so much selflessness and sacrifice austerity, but it's for their own purpose. Ultimately, they do that austerity because they're going to get a benefit back from that demigod. So that's the idea, is that it's not selfless. So it's not actually devotion, because devotion means selfless. Does that make sense? So all that there is there's Krishna everywhere, and then you have the devotional process. There's not something else. But we don't necessarily see that. So from lack of seeing that, then it's not called devotion. It's called illusion, right? Maya. Because Krishna's there, we don't see. Right? How is it we can sit on this floor and not fall through to the other side of the planet? Right? There's a potency that keeps you here. Right? Because when the scientists look at the atoms and all that, they see that there's a bunch of loosely constructed little things that are a lot of space in between. So easily one could fall through. Right? But one doesn't. Why? Because of the Lord's potencies. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Can I ask a question? In Advent Kanto Buddhism, cowherd boys have said that they have executed many pious activities to come to the point of attaining Krishna, Vita Punja Punja.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very unusual term for devotional service, Punja.
No, it's Punya?
Yeah, it's just used the word Punya. And we have to be.
No, it's a standard term we use. That's what I'm saying, is that all the terms, everything, they're all our terms.
Okay.
But they're being used by unscrupulous persons to mean something other than devotional service. Right? In other words, karma, we use the word karma. Karma just means your activities. Right? Your karma is you know, what you do. Like that. So these others have used them. So sometimes when it's used to the extreme, and we have other words, we'll choose another word rather than use that. You know? Does that make sense? So it's one of the ways of doing it. Then you separate yourself, like the Shris. They won't worship demigods. They won't bow down, nothing. Nothing to do with them. Absolutely. You know, because there's a Supreme Lord, they have nothing to do with demigods. So their disrespect for the demigods and their padati is not disrespect, because they're respecting the Lord. everybody's contained in him. So any respect due to the demigod comes down from their respect for the Lord, so they don't have to bother. Right? But the mud was in ourselves, seeing them as servants of the Lord, therefore they are respected. You know, so it's just, but it doesn't, so it's just how much you want to separate. But like the mud was, then anything that shows any kind of oneness, like much of the stuff we've been discussing over the last couple of months, the mud was would not agree to. Because their thing is two and that's it. There's nothing in between. You know, the only thing in between the two is devotional service. That's it. There's nothing else. So anything that shows oneness or these formulas of using the formless to get out of the material nature and all that, they'll stay away from all that stuff. Right? Because it's not two. You know what I'm saying? So it is a process to use. You know what I'm saying? It works. It works. So the thing is if they use it too much, therefore we don't use certain things. Like Prabhupada didn't like certain things. Like he didn't like being called Gurudev. Because that's the popular term amongst all the Mayavadis and the, you know, them for what they call their guru. So he didn't like the term. Like that. You know, or Jagat Guru, you know, it's like everybody gets on an elephant, they're Jagat Guru. So he didn't like these terms. You know what I'm saying? So then, you know, just because of their connotation. Like we say, Shakta, you know, means that you worship the energy. Technically, we're Shaktas, we worship Radharani. But we won't use the term because Shakta is in general connotation means worshiping, you know, the external energy. Does that make sense? So sometimes these terms, so technically there are terms, they're being used by others, right? Does that make sense? You know, the kids on the street, they're still using English. But they use it in their own way, so people distance themselves from that kind of talk. You know, it's considered uncultured. But they're still using, you know, same kind of words and phrases and all that. They just make it a little more spicy. Or something. Does that make sense? So that's why. So piety simply means is that it's properly performed action, recommended action. That's piety. So that means they perform so much devotional service. Therefore, they get this position. Right? Because the 11th canto then defines that piety means devotional service, and impiety means anything that's not devotional service. So in the material world, activities that you consider pious activities to go to the heavenly planets, according to the Bhagavat definition, is impious. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of definition. But otherwise we use it. Karma we use. Prabhupada uses karma yoga very freely. But devotees stay away from it. You know, now they're more comfortable with it. But, you know, 20 years ago, they would stay away from the terms. You know. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. It is quite natural that the selfishness of one person hampers the selfishness of another. For this reason, an ordinary witted person respects the doctrine of the so-called unselfish person, in view to deriving the fruits of his own selfishness. This is the other reason for the spreading of the atheistic doctrine of Karmavad. Right, so he's saying as one that they accept that there's some kind of a supreme person, they include God in it. You know, but this is God in the mode of goodness, who's just, you know, organizing and managing, you know, Satnirayan Puja, you've heard of it in India and that. This is all this is not actually, this isn't Krishna. it's not Vishnu, it's a materially conceived form of the Lord in the mode of goodness, like that. Because it means he's the one that's sanctioning all your results of your activities. Okay? So by putting that in there, and this whole point of this so-called selfless, then the Karmavad sounds very good. You know, you have a supreme that you're worshiping, and at the same time as you have
you have the results of your activities, then everything works very, very nicely. Does that make sense? So then it becomes popular. Common people can relate to it because it's got some emotion, some sentiment, some higher things, some, you know, seemingly selfless aspects to it. So is this the Matsya project? Okay. So don't let us stop you.
One of the fish. Fish.
Got your attention. How do you know it's fish? What if it's crabs?
It doesn't look liquid in the back.
What if it was, how you say, what do you call that stuff? It's clear, you put it on pancakes. Golden syrup? No, but that would be dark. It wouldn't be, isn't it? What if it was 7-Up? What if it was full of crabs? That's a good point. Okay, we'll accept that. In that way, the advocate of unselfish material bliss makes his followers engaged in activities is not easily understandable. In that way, the advocate of unselfish material bliss makes his followers engaged in activities is not easily understandable. Ordinary people may accept this doctrine to some extent due to their selfishness. But when this doctrine of karma is elaborately discussed over by them, they will engage in all the possible sinful activities due to selfishness. Right? So in other words, the common people may take it up because it sounds good and something elevating, but the person is going to do whatever he wants to do for his own selfish means. Right? Ultimately, because he's only using selflessness and religion and any concept of God for his own purposes anyway. Right? So that's why the whole thing is, you know, so this is, in other words, you've come into the general thing and now started from the bottom, right? So the real rough end of, you know, materialism like that. Then it'll go up like that. He will tell to himself, the materialist, "O brother, do not be abstained from the enjoyments. Willfully engage in the pleasures of the world so that others may not understand it." Right? Because you're supposed to be selfless. But, you know, it doesn't mean that you don't enjoy, just that you make it more, less obvious. Enjoying in this way will not produce any obstacle in the elevation of the world. Right? It means, in other words, what people don't know won't hurt them. So if you're enjoying yourself on your own, and it doesn't get in the way of someone else's enjoyment, then it's not a problem. Right? It's just if it's going to be a problem for others, then the selflessness comes in. Then you try to cooperate and all that. Right? So in other words, it's still selfish, but it's hidden. When there is no existence of an all-seeing God who sanctions the fruits of our action, then why should I be afraid of it? Right? So I perform the work, I get the result. Right? So if there's no one there to watch everything, so what does it matter what I do? Right? It's just the material energy. So I work with it properly in the moment, I get my result. Right? So now we're seeing, as before, as the philosophical, now he's bringing it down to actually how they feel and think. So you can see it's pretty self-centered, pretty materialistic. Only be a little careful that others may not understand about it. Only that if your selfishness is exposed, it will bring defame, disciplinary action by the rulers, and imitation of the wicked people, etc. Right, you'll be defamed, so your position will lost there. So much of your enjoyment will be lost. Disciplinary actions from the rulers and all that, whoever's like that, so that will also curtail that. And then those who are wicked and all that will use it and imitate and then create a problem in society. So the selflessness will be, observably destroyed. Right? Because it should be that what you see is selfless, though you're performing your activities for yourself. Right? That's their idea. Does that make sense? In that case, either you or anybody else will not have happiness in this world. Right? So if that comes about, then you won't be happy, others won't be happy. Right? Because then when it happens, they defame, then people had faith, or that was their inspiration, all these different things like that. So all of that will fall apart. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why then, that's why one should be careful. Does that make sense? But you notice in here, God's pleasure, that anything lasting, actually understanding what's the results. They think if no one else knows about it, there'll be no reaction. Right? So it's still that, like that Buddhistic concept. If I, you know, if nobody hears, there's no reaction. It doesn't happen. Like that. So it's still, it's an atheism. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's very limited in their knowledge. Like that. Okay, so we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi
Tatva Vivek. Bye. Bye.